Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker is Liz P. from the Port Fishington Group.
Please remember that. Oh my God, I feel like I'm going to throw up. My name's Liz, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Port Fishington Speakers Meeting. It meets on Monday night at 7:30. I would be there tonight, but can't be two places at once. So, it meets at Trenton and Cumberland Streets in... let me explain to you why we call it Port Fishington, because it sounds retarded and non-spiritual. But we call it Port Fishington because in Philadelphia, everything's like in neighborhoods. So it's surrounded by these three different neighborhoods, Port Richmond, Fishtown, and Kensington. And if you put that together, you get Port Fishington. And so like I said, it's Monday night, 7:30, Trenton and Cumberland Streets. And we offer you two things there, free coffee and a solution to alcoholism. And, you know, if you're ever in the hood, stop on over. You're more than welcome. We'd love to see you there. I have a sobriety date. It's October 17th, 2006. And I know it's God's grace that I stand before you because I did absolutely nothing to achieve it but show up. And, you know, and I'm a sponsor. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. And it's an awesome privilege. It's an honor to do anything that Alcoholics Anonymous asks, to help the women that asked me to help them. It's just such a gift. I want to thank Dave for asking me to come here because I would not have volunteered. But to be honest, you know, the first time I spoke at an AA meeting, I spoke here, so it's definitely an honor to be asked to come back somewhere, because not many people ask me to come back. They would say, like, you're flagged, please leave, don't ever come back here, don't even stand on my steps, you know, and you wanted me to come back, and so that's awesome. So my job is to tell you in a general way what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today, and I try to the best of my ability to do that. I'm a little ADD, so sometimes I do get off track, but I don't know. I come from a wonderful family. Like, I have two parents, and they love me, and they love my brothers and sisters, and they love each other, and they're still together to this day, and they're an awesome family. And I'll tell you, when I was growing up, I didn't think they were so awesome. I personally couldn't stand my brothers and sisters. I couldn't stand my mother. I hated her. My father really didn't care for her either. And I would tell you, like, they were the meanest people in the world. And really, they're not. You know, like, I learned that after I did a fourth and fifth step, because they were my first top two resentments, my mother and my father. And, you know, like, I always think if my sister were to come up here and tell you her story, like, her idea of our childhood would be completely polar opposite, you know. I just thought it was horrible, and it really wasn't that bad. I had everything that I ever wanted, you know, I had everything that I ever needed, and most of what I wanted. And usually if I didn't get what I wanted, I would just, like, slam on the ground, you know, kick and scream, and my parents would, you know, do the best they could to give me, you know, to provide for us. And I don't want you to think I come from money, because I don't. My parents work very hard for the things that they have. And they still work very hard today for the things that they have to give, you know, my brothers and sisters the best of everything. And I was just so selfish from the beginning. I didn't know it at the time, but I was. I was a monster. And I don't know. I could tell you this story, like, you know, like, from the beginning I had, you know, like, some good friends. I grew up in West Philadelphia, and, you know, like, I had this really awesome set of friends, and I just never felt right. Like, something was always wrong with me. And I can tell you, like, I always wanted to be like you. I wanted to be like her. I wanted to be like him. I wanted to be like everybody else but myself. And from an early age, and I'll tell you this story, and this is a really funny example of how I was. See, all the little girls across the street, they got their hair cut really short in a bob, you know, but it was like around the ear, real short. And I wanted my hair cut too because I was dying to be like them. And I just wanted them to accept me and to love me. And I wanted my hair cut short too. So, and I had hair down past my butt. And I cut it off up around my ears. What I didn't know was all the little girls across the street had head lice. And they need their hair cut because they can't get bugs out. I didn't have head lice, but I cut my hair anyway. And the girls were like, oh, your mom had to suck the bugs out of your hair with a vacuum too? And I'm like, what? No, I just wanted to be like you. You know? And this is how I was. I was just always dying to be somebody else. And it didn't matter. And like I said, I got these really great parents, but still, like, and these really great brothers and sisters, but still, like, I was just loud. I was rude. I was obnoxious. I was like, I needed your attention. I wanted you to notice me. I was extra loud. If you were out there, I was in here. You were going to hear me coming. And I was going to make sure of it. Like, I needed you to notice me. And I don't know why, because I had plenty of love and attention at home, but I just was like, ugh. I'm fed up with them people, you know. I can't stand them. And I don't know why I was like that, but, you know, and, I'll tell you, the most traumatic thing about my childhood was we moved from one section of the city to another. And I'll tell you why we moved. First, the patio furniture got stolen, and then the bird bath, and then the clothesline pole, and then the trash cans, and then the barbecue grill, and then the car got stolen. And then the rent-a car got stolen. And then the rent-a car, after that rent-a car got stolen. So my mom was like, this is, you know, like, I got it. My kids, they're going to come into my home next. And my kids aren't safe. And they deserve better than this. And so we moved from one section of the city. We moved from West Philadelphia to Manayunk. If you've ever been in two places, like going from the suburbs, the ghetto to the suburbs. So it was really dramatic. Traumatic, whatever. It was all the Maddox for me. I just couldn't believe, like, how dare you take me out of my environment? I was, you know, 13. I was going into eighth grade. We moved in the middle of the summer, so I had to hang out with my 7-year-old little sister. And at this point, like, she's playing Polly Pockets and, you know, and I'm playing Polly Pockets with the 7-year-old, but mind you, I have to have the Polly Pocket with the big house and the nicest car. And, I was such a jerk. And, my whole outlook was like, how dare you? You know, not thank you for keeping me safe. Thank you for, you know, trying to provide me with a better education. As a matter of fact, I told my mother when we first moved there, she said, what's the matter, Liz? What's the matter with you? And I said, Mom, I think you should call the fire department because I'm going to burn this house down. Not thank you, nothing. I'm going to burn the house down was my response. I was just so miserable, and I wanted everybody else to be miserable with me. And this is before I picked up a drink. And I can tell you, like, I made a couple friends. I started to go to school eventually. Like, school came around with school. And it was really hard making friends because all the girls were really catty. I think every girl that I ran into was so catty. But, you know, now looking back at it, I was the only common denominator of every girl I ever hung out with. So, you know, I had a hard time making friends. And I joined the cheerleading squad. And now I run around like this everywhere I go, and I'm like, hey, how you doing today? And my mom's like, could you just sit down? And I'm like, no, thank you. Yeah. And what time's dinner? And she's like, oh my God, what am I going to do with you? And, you know, but I'm on this cheerleading squad, and I got one girlfriend, and God forbid, I don't know how to have two friends at once. I can only do one friend at once. So, you know, I got one girlfriend, and let me tell you, like I said, my parents were really good to me. They don't drink and they don't drug, and there's no craziness in my family like that. The only alcoholism they suffer from is mine. I got this girlfriend, and her parents, like, they drank and they smoked this funny stuff. And I'm like 8th grade, 9th grade, so we're like, let's do some shots of vodka, and I can't even tell you, really why I did it. I just did it because it was something to do, and it really didn't even do nothing to me. I really didn't like it, to be honest with you. But I went to this, weird high school in the middle of Philadelphia. It was called the W.B. Saw Agricultural High School. And we, at the high school, we have cows, horses, and sheep and stuff. And you got to take this 28-day program to get into the school in the middle of the summer. So it's the summer, and I'm out with this girl, and we do a couple shots. And I don't even really get drunk. But I go to my summer program the next day, and I'm like, oh my God, I was so intoxicated and annihilated, and I was trashed and obliviated and did it, on and on. And everybody was like, oh, you want to hang out on Friday night? I didn't know you drank. I didn't know you were so cool. And I was like, oh, yes, more ways for them to love me and more ways for them to accept me. And I just fit right in. And that was always my goal, fit in or stand out. I don't really know, but I just wanted you to pay attention to me. And so now I'm drinking on Friday nights, and we're at keg parties, and we're at house parties, and if you had really good parents, they let us drink in your house. But my parents were not cool. They didn't. Not cool parents. So, shortly, the drink was working for a while. I'm in high school, I'm drinking every weekend, I'm fitting in, I'm not, crazy, it's, going real good for me, life is real good for me, and what happens to me is one day I go to school, and I leave behind my pocketbook, and I get called into the counselor's office the next day, and my parents are sitting there, and the problem is I had some paraphernalia that was in my pocketbook that shouldn't have been there, and the school really didn't agree with it, and they said, Liz, you can either go to rehab after school, or you could go to jail. And I said, what do you mean, the cops will come here and get me? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, and I'll leave in the handcuffs? And she was like, yeah. But see, what you don't know is for my pride and my ego, I was dying to leave in handcuffs that day because you would pay attention to me a little bit more. And my mom's hysterical, saying my daughter can't have a record at the age of 16. You need to go to rehab. And I'm like, get out, call the cops, call them up. I'm ready to go. But I had to go to rehab after school. But the good part about that was rehab after school was in the middle of the center, in the middle of the city, and there were so many younger kids, and they were doing so much better stuff than I was doing, and I just took my little show right on there, and I met all these cool people, and I just fit right in some more, and I didn't learn much there. I learned, get a sponsor, get a home group, stuff like that, but I gotta be honest, when I was there, I was, 16, 17, and I couldn't believe, the counselor said, you can't drink ever again, and I was like, I'm not even 21 yet, are you nuts? And I just, threw that right out the window. That was just, I just gotta get it over with, and so, shortly after that, I graduated high school, and not only am I drinking every day on a daily basis, but, I'm drinking, I got beers in my locker, and I'm caught in class, and so I graduated, by the skin of my teeth. My grades were horrible. My attitude was horrible. I was going to teach the class. I didn't need a teacher. I was just real sassy, and ignorant, and that's just how it was. I graduated high school, and shortly after that, my mom comes home one day, and there's a U-Haul truck out front. And she's like, Liz, what are you doing? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm moving out. Forgot to tell you. And I put my little luggage, and all I really had was luggage, in my U-Haul truck. And I moved in with these two girls, and I had this beautiful apartment. It was a three-bedroom apartment. It was in a prime location. There was the bar, the liquor store, a cheesesteak place, and the laundromat, all, in the same strip. It was wonderful. And I'm drinking every day. Because drinking's working at this point. Something was always off. But when I put that drink in me, I was just I was just okay. I was cool. I was all right. I didn't have no more anxiety. I didn't have no more fear. I didn't have all that going on with me, and it was just relaxing, you know? And so the goal was to drink every day as much as possible. And what I didn't know was, you know, I needed a job to do this. So, you know, in any job that I had ever worked, I worked at the Giant for like 2 years, which was pretty good for me when I was young. And then, like, when I got, like, 17, 18, all of a sudden I became bipolar, and I had panic attacks and episodes, and this is really just me acting. And I tell them, I gotta leave my cash register right now, I gotta go home, and they'd be like, okay, whatever you need to do, you know? And eventually, like, I couldn't even keep lying like that no more. I had to go. I was like, I'm not even coming in, I quit. And, so at the age of 18, I got this apartment, and I jumped headfirst into the adult entertainment industry. And I always share that. Some people don't like it, but that's too bad because it's my story. So, and I tell you why I share that with you. Because I was so delusional and so crazy that I really thought I was somebody. That attention was so powerful for me at first. And I really thought, like, Jenna Jameson, watch her back. Here Liz Paul comes. That's how crazy I was. Really crazy. And that's just how I thought. You know what I mean? And that was my attitude. They asked me what I did. I'd love to tell you. Because I just had so much junky pride and so much ego. And this head, like, wouldn't shut up unless I had a drink in me. It was horrible. And I'm drinking every day, and I got this apartment, and I got this boyfriend, and my life is going so wonderful. I buy this brand new car. I went to the dealership. Don't ever do this, by the way. I went to the dealership with great intentions on buying a used car, and the problem was I took one too many Xanax that day, and I walked out with one off the showroom floor, and I couldn't afford it, but I bought it anyway. And I was going to take care of it. Don't worry, I just worked harder. And I had this great guy who was real supportive. He did absolutely nothing all day. He didn't work. Because I was so codependent, I just needed him to love me. And he lived with me, and I paid his way. And I was paying child support. I didn't even have children. And I'm like holding it down, you know what I mean? I got the apartment paid for, I got the car paid for, and I got this lifestyle going on, and I just think, here I am. This is awesome. And shortly after, like a couple months and years of doing that, or year, whatever, however long it was, it didn't work no more. And I started to crumble on the inside. And the bills started to pile up, and I didn't want to answer the phone. And the drink stopped working, so I didn't want to look at myself anymore. Because the more I drank, it was like the more sober I stayed. It was crazy. It just was not working. And it was painful. And I started to feel all these feelings that I never felt before, like guilt, remorse, and ashamed of myself. And I couldn't even look myself in the mirror no more. Let me tell you what happened. I was about 22 years old, and at this point, my family wants absolutely nothing to do with me, because I forgot to tell you, I steal from you, and they don't want me around, and my mom doesn't want me to talk to my brothers and sisters, because I take, you know, Game Boys and toys and their money and piggy banks and stuff like that that doesn't belong to me, and I don't have many friends, because I climb through windows and I take from you too. And none of my friends want nothing to do with me. And it's just me and this guy. And he's like, I got a light in the load because I got to pay for him too, so he got to go at this point. And I had nothing. I had one family member, my aunt came over, and it was my 22nd birthday, and she said, I have a birthday card for you. And I was like, oh, this is wonderful. I won't have to go out and do those things that I need to do for money, and I'll just drink all night with this little bit of money in this birthday card. And I opened up my birthday card, and it said, please go to rehab. please get help. There's no money in there. And she said to me, Liz, I know you have a problem. Why don't you just tell me what it is? And I was like, problem? It's so wonderful. Can you see this beautiful apartment? I lived in, like, the hood. I was like, it's crazy. I was, like, the only white girl in my building, and it was rough. And she was like, what is wrong with you? Just tell me what's going on with you. And I told her I had, you know, I had a drinking problem. And she said, if I come back tomorrow morning and I take you away to detox, would you go? And I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Why not? I don't got nothing else to do. So, plus 3 days before that, I had gotten a DUI. I was driving, and the cop was following me for like 10 minutes, but my radio was up, and I kept falling asleep, and I just didn't see him. And I mean, he had me on camera and everything. He was like, you want to see what you look like? I was like, sure. So, you know, so I didn't have my car, and my apartment was like, they were giving me an eviction notice shortly, but, you know. So she said she would come back the next morning, so of course I started drinking heavily because I was getting prepared, but she came back 3 hours later and with my whole family, and she's like, if you're going to go, we're going to take you right now. And I was like, okay. And you know, and I didn't know about detox. I just packed my jacket. I don't even think I had socks on in the condition I was. I just ran out the house. And I really didn't know, like, what it was about. I didn't know you could pack luggage and stuff. Like, I didn't know I was going to stay there for a week. I just didn't know. So, you know, I go to detox, I go to detox, and like the next day I wake up, and this wonderful boyfriend that I had, he's sitting right in detox with me, and I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. So we get this plan together that we're going to go to California, and we'll just drive out to California, and life would be good. And because I don't know nobody in California. I don't even know where a bar is in California. I don't even know how to get to California, but I'm going to California. And I called my mom, and I said, I got it. I'm going to go to California. Problem solved. And she said, Liz, if you think you're going to kick a heroin habit in 5 days, there's something seriously wrong with you. And all my life, my mother has said to me, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? And I would never know what to tell her, because I never knew what was wrong with me. And I'm going to tell you today, like, that spiritual malady that was wrong with me. It's that disconnection from God. The untreated alcoholism that I suffer from, you know. And I didn't know that at the time, so of course I'm like, what do you mean? California's not a good idea? Where do you want me to go then? And it's kind of funny because my sponsor says to me today, you know, like, you were to go, if you had cancer, would you go to California? Would that solve your problem? And I don't think it would. And so it's funny, but... So I go to rehab in Pennsylvania, and like I'm there for 3 months. They called it Eagleville Life, and I did life at Eagleville. And I don't know. I get out of there, and I go to a recovery house because I don't have a car anymore because they repossessed it. I don't have an apartment anymore because they evicted me, and I don't have anywhere else to go because my family's not letting me live with them. And so I wind up at this recovery house in Frankfort, Philadelphia. And we have to go to these meetings every day. And my first thought is, oh my God, I have to go to AA meetings? But I did drugs. What am I going to tell them? How are they going to help me? And see, I didn't understand that really, like, alcohol and drugs was but a symptom of my problem. I didn't think nobody would be willing to help me. How was I going to tell alcoholics I stole their money off the floor to get loaded? And I just didn't think it was going to work for me. And I went to my first AA meeting, and I sat down in the back of the room. And it's called the Northeast Club in Philly. I always call it the No Teeth Club. It's a joke, I'm just kidding. I sit down next to this gentleman, and he tells me a couple things I need to do. First, I don't know how or why, but I start telling my whole life story, He's like, okay. He's like, Liz, you know, you need to get a sponsor, you need to get a home group, and you need to get in service. And he said, matter of fact, there's this young woman, she's coming here tomorrow to chair the meeting, and she could really help you. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'll meet her. And so the next day I go back to the meeting and I get a sponsor. And I do the 12 steps. And I'd love to tell you that my life was just so wonderful and I stayed sober ever since, but that's really not what happened. See, what happened was when she told me to do certain things, I only did certain things. And when she would say, how's your prayer life? I would look at her like she had eight heads and be like, pray. You're corny. What are you doing? I'm not praying. Are you nuts? And certain things like that I didn't want to do. And I made amends and I apologized to everybody. And I was just like not doing what she told me to do. But I really was like thinking I was given an honest effort. So I stayed sober for like a good 4 months on my crazy sobriety. But eventually I drank again. And I'm here to tell you that every I never I ever had came true. And I wound up in this abandoned house in the middle of Kensington. And I'm not from this area. I was raised with morals and values, and I'll tell you, I threw them all out the window to drink the way that I drank. And I had to come here to Alcoholics Anonymous to get them all back. And I got this house. And I'm so glad that my parents are so good to me that they bring me bedroom furniture. And that's the only furniture I have is a bed. And like we had lights and running water, so it was really good, but we never paid a bill there. We were just squatting. And I hung really nice curtains, though. And I was just crazy. It was just so crazy. And my world was so little, so dark, and so dirty that I just wanted to die every day. And finally, one day, I'll tell you how I got sober. This is exactly what happened. I had a roommate, and he had food stamps, and I was starving, and I had an 8 in Indies, and I said, please, can we go to ShopRite and buy a box of Hot Pockets? And he said, no, we got to sell the food stamps. We can go to ShopRite, but we're not getting Hot Pockets. And I was like, I don't think you understand. They're only $2.50, and I'm starving. And he said, I don't think you understand. I need that $2.50. We're not getting Hot Pockets. So resentment got me sober. And I said, this is it. I'm calling my mother. And the parents that I have, they came immediately and got me. And they took me away. And I went away to detox and rehab. And I want to tell you, I stayed sober. But I didn't. And I got out of detox and I got out of rehab. And I repeated the same pattern for about 27 more times. And finally, I forgot to mention that I picked up this little boyfriend in AA, like way back when, and he wants me to get sober, and I can't stay sober. He's like, why don't you just give it a try? And I'll tell you, his name's Bill Rizzo, just so we're all clear, but he's like, you just try it. And I'm like, no, I'm just gonna die, hopefully. I don't know. And he says, listen, so I wake up one morning and I'm really sick, and he says, I'll take you to the bar if I can take you to detox. And I said, that sounds like a pretty good idea, only because we were stopping at the bar. And I wound up at detox that day. And I went to this recovery house in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Well, I went to rehab first, but rehab's not for me, so I left early. But I did stay sober this time, don't worry. So I get to this recovery house because I have absolutely nowhere else to go, and every bridge is burnt, and every avenue I have is exhausted, and nobody wants nothing to do with me. And I live in this recovery house, and they have some rules there, and you have to go to AA meetings, you have to do your chore, you have to pay your rent. But if you do not get a sponsor and work the 12 steps as a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will not live there. You can catch up on your rent, but if you don't work these 12 steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you cannot live there. And they made that pretty clear that night. And this girl, Megan, I just put everybody on blast because we're not anonymous amongst one another. So if you know Megan, she's like the mother Teresa of Kensington. She's wonderful. So Megan is showing up at this recovering house, and here's our history. I don't really like her. And matter of fact, I really don't like her. And she's always like, "Hey, how you doing, Liz?" And I'm like, "Not good, bitch." She's like, "Okay, see you tomorrow. I want to go to a meeting. Want to do this. Want to hang out. Let's do this. Blah 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 blah." And she's just like very persistent, always happy, always got a bunch of girls with her. They're all about going to meetings and having fun. And I just don't understand. And I can't stand her. And I get to this recovery house, and like I said, she's there every day. And my head tells me, and I'll tell you, this is the best thing my head ever told me, was, Liz, if you just ask Megan for help and do what she does, you will probably stay sober. And that's what I did. I asked Megan for help. I don't know, Megan took me through the 12 steps and introduced me to a power greater than myself, and my life is absolutely amazing today. And really all we did was we sat down and we talked about the doctor's opinion, and we talked about the spiritual malady, and we talked about the phenomenon of craving, and I didn't know those things. Like, I didn't know that I had a God-sized hole that I needed to fill, and I tried to fill it with everything. Men, money, sneakers, jewelry, clothes, everything. I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had a phenomenon of craving. I didn't know when I picked up the first drink it was going to ask for a second. The second demands a third. The third needs a fourth. I wanted the ninth drink more than I wanted the eighth drink. Like, I didn't understand these things. But I can remember, honestly remember, nights going into the bar thinking, I'm just grabbing a six-pack. And it, you know, that's it. 8 o'clock at night, and at 2 a.m. I'm thinking, how the hell am I still sitting here? What's that? You were just in for a six-pack. And I didn't know. And she made it real clear to me. She would say, "Do you understand?" And I would say, "Oh, yeah, I understand." And she said, "Well, good. Explain it to me." And I'd be like, "Okay, I really don't understand." She made sure every step of the way, like, I knew what was going on. We said the third step prayer, I wrote out a fourth step, or she helped me write out my fourth step, and we sat down and we went over my fifth step, and I can honestly tell you, I thought that I was the nicest, sweetest person you ever did meet. I would have just did anything for you, because I was like Miss America. Here she comes, Miss America, you know. And I didn't know that I was selfish and, greedy and lazy and entitled. And so when we went over my fourth step, the part that I had played was I was drinking some more. And she just let me go on and on and on. And then she said, "Are you ready for what I'm going to say to you?" And I was like, "Okay." And she told me all these really, like, character defects, really rude things about me that I never noticed. I was like, Jesus. But really what she did for me that day was she told me the truth. She told me who I was and what I was, and she showed me, because it was right there in black and white, and I couldn't deny it. And I was like the lowest scum on the earth, and she said that was okay, that all my liabilities would soon become my assets. And then of course I went on and I went into my bedroom, my recovery house bedroom that I shared with my cellie. I took that hour, I looked over the first 5 proposals, I didn't leave anything out, and I had such a powerful experience with my sixth step, which is really crazy, because usually I heard one person say meetings 6 and 7 were just filler steps. I was like, wow. I was in my recovery house bedroom, and I'm hysterically crying. And I can't even breathe because the tears are just rolling down my face, and I'm hysterical. And my roommate comes in, and she goes, "Oh my God, Liz, what's wrong with you?" And I explained to her that, you know, like everything I had owned and everything that I owned, I earned in some grimy way, and I was just a dirtball, a scumbag, and I didn't want to be that person no more. And she said, well, don't tell me, Liz. Tell God that. And with that, she left the room, and I got down on my knees that day, and I asked God from the bottom of my heart, please don't ever let me be that person. And since that day, I haven't been that person. You know, each day I have to ask God to remove my character defects because they're always cropping up. You know, I personally think I like my character defects. That's sometimes why I act out on them. But I always have to ask God to remove them to make me a better person. And it was really simple. The next direction she gave me was to take my fourth step and add some people to it and set out to make amends with, you know, some people. And I was like, not even 68, maybe 2 months over, and I like run home to my mom, and I'm like, I'm gonna make this amends to you, and da 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 da. My mom's like, stop, you're not making anything of me, please leave. You know, like show me something different. You know, 60 days isn't enough, and so when I was 8 months over, I went back and I sat down with my mother and I did it again. And you know, all she really wants is me to continue doing what I'm doing on a daily basis. And it's really not that hard. I just follow a few simple directions. And every time I go to my mother's house, I show up and I'm available to her. And if she needs me to empty her dishwasher, take out her trash, and do her laundry, I don't mind. Because I try to be in service to my mother. And my father. He lives here, too. I was just there on a Sunday, yesterday, and I took down all the Christmas decorations, and I really, really didn't want to because I had my own house to take down Christmas decorations in, but I did it anyway because she asked me to help. I got some really cool men's stories, so I like to talk about them too. And my family also was so good to me that at like a year and a half sober, they took me to Disney World. And this is a really powerful experience, and I will always share this story. So I have younger brothers and sisters, I told you that. My little brother, he's 12, and I'm 26, so there's a very big, large age gap there. And I went to Disney World, and we're getting on roller coasters. Now, I'm scared to death because these things are sick. I mean, upside down, inside out, they go backwards, forwards. And I'm like, oh my God. So this one roller coaster, but you gotta get on the ride because you're in Disney World. Like, you have to do it. And it was a 12-year-old, so you don't have a choice in the matter. So my little brother's like, come on, let's get on this ride. And the next ride we get on, he's like, oh my God, Liz, I don't know about this ride. I'm scared. And I said, just calm down, Jimmy. I got something we can say. And I grabbed his hand and I said the fear prayer with him. And I just said, God, remove the fear, have us be what you want us to be. And we just got on the ride. And when we got off the ride, he said to me, do you think we could say that again? Because I think it worked. How convenient. He learned it in 5 minutes. It took me 5 years. He said, but it was just really awesome. So, you know, I don't know. It was really cool. I don't know what. I have, you know, like, I know what happens if I'm not cleaning up the wreckage of my past and if I'm not making right my wrongs. I usually wind up going to jail. And I got locked up this time. I was 7 months sober. And I kept telling the cop that I'm sober. He's like, I don't care. Watch your head. Get in the car. See, what happened to me was, for that DUI, honest to God, they must have lost my address, but they caught up with me. And 5 years later, and, I had to make my wrongs right. So it's like 3 o'clock in the morning now. I've been sitting there about 10 hours, and they finally take me out of my cell to fingerprint me, because Philadelphia, they just move so quickly. And they got me out there, and there's this guy there, and he got mace in his eyes, and he's all crazy, and And I'm talking to him, and I said, you know, what are you here for? And he said, you know, drugs, you run from the cop. And immediately I'm like, you need to get sober. You need to go to the last stop in Philadelphia. They can really help you. God can take care of all this. You just have to believe. And the cop's like, man, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Can you please shut up? And I'm like, no, you don't know. You've got to go to the last stop is what I'm telling him. And I honestly believe today in my heart that I went to jail that night, you know, to do what I had to do, but to plant a seed. Because I did see that gentleman at the last stop. He was only there for a day, but he was there. So maybe when he's willing, he will come back. Or maybe, you know, when he's ready. I don't know. And this is my favorite amends story. I had this one roommate, and she lived with me, and, yeah, that's what roommates do, they live with you. And, so she's living with me, and she decides one day she just wants to go to detox, and I'm like, I don't understand, what do you mean? You want to go away? Alright, see ya. But it was in the middle of the month, and I really wasn't that nice about it, because it was the middle of the month, and the rent was due, and, but she had left, and, she left me with all the bills that month, and she had left behind all her belongings, and I'm such a great person, I just sold all of her stuff, her shoes, her clothes, everything must go, and it did, and you know how we do, I save the cutest things for myself, you know, and I show up at this meeting, the South College Speaker meeting in Delaware on Wednesday night. And I'm about two years sober at this point, and I got on this bright yellow jacket that just happens to belong to this girl. Now, I haven't worn it in years, but I don't even know where I was holding on to it, but I bought that day at the mall, like, this pink and yellow shirt, so it matched perfect, and it was a chilly night, and I'm in Delaware, and guess who shows up, and I got a coat on, and then here she's sober, and she's been sober for quite some time, and I sit down with her, and I have to make amends to her, and I'm like, do you want your jacket back? And she didn't want her coat back, but it was really awesome. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but it was awesome. I don't know, it's so crazy. Like, I'm still in touch with her. We're really good friends today. We don't get to hang out as much as we'd like to, but I go to every one of her anniversaries, and she comes to every one of mine, and it's just amazing to see somebody, you know, grow in this process. You know, steps 10, 11, and 12 are pretty simple. You know, I constantly have to watch out for selfishness, fear, resentment, dishonesty, all those things, because they constantly crop up, and they're always going to crop up. It's just what am I willing to do about them. And, you know, half the time I'll pray, and I'll make amends if I have to, or, you know, I'll help somebody if I have to, or, you know, I don't really like to call people and tell you what's going on with me, because I'm me, and I'm so sober, and you don't really need to know, you know, because my pride and my ego, I'll just be so embarrassed if I tell you I'm flawed, as if you don't already know, and I just don't want to share that with people, and I paid the consequence for that, simply. Sleepless nights in sobriety, being crazy on the phone with my sponsor, taking it out on other people. I did all that, and on a daily basis, I try. You know, I really give an honest effort to, you know, reach out and do the things that I need to do. And I don't know. I really thought I was meditating by driving my car with no radio and praying and listening. But I got a new sponsor, and she showed me really how to meditate, because she said, "I don't know what the hell you thought you were doing, but you weren't meditating." And she taught me how to sit down and to breathe and to listen and how not to move and to stay still. And, you know, it was just so cool. Like, and, you know, every morning I try and do that. I sit there for the first, you know, 5-10 minutes of the day, and I just listen. And I just, you know, listen to what's going on around me. And I just try and calm down. And it's like if I don't do it, like, my day is just jacked up from the door. Like, it's really bad. It's just amazing. Like, I mean, I guess I was doing good because I was making an honest effort in my car every day, but this is like, it's amazing. Like, I can't even explain it to you. It's so cool. And, you should try it. And step 12 is pretty simple. To carry this message, if you must use words, because this is really not what I stand here and tell you. It's really what I do on a daily basis. It's how I move my feet. It's just that simple. You know, like, I always share this story, and I know, like, I really had nothing to do with it, but, you know, like, not too long ago, I got to give a person a 2-year coin. And I never thought I was getting a 2-year coin, so it's just amazing to be a part of somebody's life in such a way. And I know it's God. When I first got here, I didn't really believe in God, but let me tell you how my belief came about, because I always like to share this story, but I was going so fast I forgot. What happened to me was, when I was 60 days sober, I was just, maybe I wasn't 60 days, like 30 days, but I was just really running around, like, trying to do the 12 steps, listening to Megan, and I was like, she was like, just believe in what I believe in for right now, and it'll be okay, and what happened to me was, I went to the last stop clubhouse, I was at a midnight meeting, and this woman was chairing the meeting, and she said, I need to talk to you in the back, Liz. And I said, okay. And I didn't know this lady from a can of paint, a hole in the wall, you can say how you want to, I didn't know her. She was like, I just want to tell you, a couple months back, I had seen you on the L. And here's what happened. I was riding the L train, that's the elevated train that goes through the city, and I had overdosed on my ride. And because I live in the city of brotherly love, the people had me picked up, hoisted up, they were ready to put me off on the next stop. And when the doors opened, this lady stepped into the train and she was like, what are you doing? She needs medical attention. We have to get the paramedics. And she stopped the train and the train attendant came on and the paramedics came on and they hit me with the Narcan and they brought me back to life. And I didn't know all that happened. Like, I didn't know they were going to put me off the train. That's just crazy. And it's because that day, I knew that there was a God. I just knew it. And I didn't need you to believe for me. I didn't need to believe in what you believed in because I had my own belief and I knew it in my heart. And I'll never forget it because that night, at a topic, it was a topic meeting. And usually you tell the topic and then everybody tells the topic and then you go around and share about it. And this is the first time I ever opened up my mouth at an AA meeting and I raised my hand and I wanted to talk about God. And then I was like, and they were like, oh, calm down, it's not your turn. I don't know. And the train attendant was like, girl, you died on my train. It was crazy. But I know. Just like I know. You know, it's just so amazing. But anyway, yeah, next step 12. So, I don't know. It talks about having other affairs because I honestly believe God wanted us to have other affairs. So I have to practice these principles in my community, at home. I would say at work, but I just got laid off and I'm a full-time nanny now. Which, this baby is so cute. It's like cool because all baby wants is love and attention and, you know, and just to be loved and held. And it's kind of like what God wants. He just wants to be loved and he doesn't have no judgment. He's just pure. And it's just amazing. So, in my home life and in my relationships and I tell you about little Rizzo, and I'm still with little Rizzo today, and on most days, we're just doing this thing, walking this path together, and it's absolutely beautiful. On some days, we're two crazy alcoholics in a relationship, but we've gotten a lot better. I don't know, I can tell you all about my little toys and gizmos and gadgets, and I have a car, and a cell phone, and I just bought a PlayStation 3 for Christmas, you know, like, materialistic items will always come as long as you're willing to work for them. But the best promise I got from Alcoholics Anonymous was a peace of mind. Because on a daily basis, my head would tell me, Liz, go get one. Nobody will know. Just take a drink. Take the edge off. Calm down. Relax. This, that. She's thinking about you. He's thinking about you. They're thinking about you. They're talking about you. Like, that was what was going on in my head. And God took that from me. And I don't think like that no more on most days. And it's just amazing. and the relationship I have with my higher power today is absolutely amazing. Because I came here and I thought it was corny to believe in God. And the best gift I have is I don't fight a drink today. And that's absolutely amazing. Because when I got here, I thought, hold on to your chair because you're in for the ride of your life. And that's really how I felt. Like, hanging on to the chair was what I needed to do. And it's just not. God took that obsession from me. And, you know, it's available to anybody in this room. You just have to be willing to ask and to do the work on a daily basis. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.